and knock on our door.
Come knock on our door.
We've been waiting for you.
We've been waiting for you.
Where the kisses are hers and hers and his. Three's company too. Come and dance on our floor.
Thank you for knocking on our door and welcome to the Regal Beagle Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the much-loved television sitcom Three's Company. Here we review and discuss each and every Three's Company episode, covering all 8 seasons in chronological order. My name is Danko Jones, and joining me today, he's back. That's your line. I stole it from you right here. He's back, my cousin Cameron. Cameron, you're back.
Yeah, he's back. I'm back. That's me. Yeah. Hey. Hi, everyone.
How have you been?
I've been good. You know, it's been a while. But I'm very glad to be back. I'm excited to talk Three's Company. I'm excited to dive into this week's episode, actually.
Are you, though? Like, full disclosure here, Cameron. You canceled on me last week.
Whoa. Yeah? Okay. Well, yes, I did. But that had absolutely nothing to do with my zeal for this week's episode.
All right, let's start.
It was more of just life admin, you know?
Right. Okay, well, I like how you've started off by flattering this episode we're about to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay, so season 5, episode 19, Double Trouble, aired March 24, 1981, directed by Dave Powers, written by Mark Fink, Martin Rips, and Joseph Storetsky. Jack pretends to be his own twin in order to spend time with Mr. Furley's niece. Cameron, what did you think of Double Trouble?
I loved Double Trouble.
Amazing. It's one of my favorite episodes of all time.
This is definitely one of my favorite Three's Company episodes that I've ever seen.
It is one of the best ones. Yes. Top 5.
I will say the biggest distraction for me was the last time we had been at each other's company discussing this particular show, Chrissy was still sort of a regular and she was kind of on the way out. But it seems as though, despite the fact that she's still in, you know, the opening credits, that she is no longer at play at all. And instead we have somebody else by the name of Cindy.
You haven't seen a Cindy episode until now?
This is my first exposure to Cindy Snow. And I have to say, I'm really disappointed.
By Cindy?
Yeah. She's compared to the rest of them, and I'm sure it's intimidating coming into a show with all of these sort of like heavy hitters and they've already found a groove and everything, but like I just found even her basic acting skills, you know, left me wanting more. I was very disappointed with Cindy.
She was an unknown plucked from obscurity to become thrown on a show that at the time was like the Friends of its generation.
Right.
So she had a big shoes to fill and yeah, it was kind of, you know, thrown her in the deep end.
Oh man. Yeah. And not just as like, you know, a recurring, like just like a bit part, but she was like filled big shoes.
Yeah.
So it just felt like every time, you know, they wrote her into a scene, she just kind of threw a wet blanket over it. And there was no chemistry there. And she just felt like really stiff and stale and like over, you know, just really over dramatic in the way that she delivered some of the lines, which I mean, usually works, but in this case, it just felt a little bit too much. But I think all of that was, you know, didn't matter to me because there were so many amazing things going on in this episode.
Yep. It's one of the best, despite Cindy Snow being there. I think your opinion on her is held pretty much largely by all of the most Three's Company fans. And Cindy ended up, spoiler alert, lasting for, you know, this season and a little bit of the next season. But they quickly realized it and phased her out.
Wow. Okay. So I'm not crazy to feel this way.
No. It definitely, you know, she just wasn't up to par with what Suzanne Summers had, you know, left behind.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, like you're saying, other than that, everyone pulls their weight.
Oh, man.
To make this one of the best episodes ever. I'm glad you feel that way because yeah, this is one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah, especially you know, Jack's twin brother, Austin from Texas.
Yes, it's amazing. That is amazing. Austin from Texas.
Austin from Texas.
And they dress exactly alike, except Austin has a hat.
He's got a hat.
Everywhere he goes.
It was, And I mean, the scene that just, I mean, I can't say that I've ever really been, you know, doubled over in laughter ever before while watching this show. But for the first time, I think this, you know, it was a Hallmark moment. And, you know, my girlfriend was sort of putzing around as I was watching this. And after I, you know, she had heard me watch it and how I reacted to the episode, she refused to believe that I was watching Three's Company because during the scene when Jack and Austin from Texas are in the same room at the celebration party with Furley, and he is successfully fools Furley into thinking both of them are in the room, I was howling. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was the greatest. It's one of the greatest television scenes in all of history. Honestly, it's one of the greatest scenes ever. And this episode is hardly ever talked about when people bring up favorite Three's Company episodes. I think it's kind of lost.
What? Why? Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. Because there's other episodes later on even that everyone goes to. There's an episode, and I won't spoil it for everyone, but there's an episode where Jack takes some pills and goes to a party, and he does a lot of physical comedy that pretty much made him, you know, like the legend that he is. And they always use that. Stills are used to describe John Ritter and stills from that episode. But I never hear about this episode in you know, spoken about it with like that particular episode, which will be coming up in seasons to come. But there's a few other ones like the pot episode, I think you watched as well. That's a big one. The Swami, the Chrissy's Swami episode, the Blue Movies episode. Those are kind of like because of the subject matter, it was you know, also talked about. But this one, it's a simple gag.
Yeah,
very simple. And it
worked. I was quite surprised that it took until late season 5 for them to, like, almost the 100th episode, I feel like, to get to a twin gag. I feel like that is just, they've been sitting on that one for a while.
Yeah, but, like, you know, Mr. Roper's a little bit smarter than Furley. He wouldn't fall for that. But Furley, and with aided by alcohol, I mean, that's just perfect for anything. You can float anything, you know, and if Furley's, you know, drunk, anything can happen.
Yeah. And that I think is the beauty of Don Knotts as Furley that you didn't really have with Roper, is that I think he opens up he gives them everybody so much more room, and the writers a lot more room to play with, because it's believable because he's, you know, he's that much of a character.
I love the one where, you know, Jack says to Mr. Furley, "Oh, you're being paranoid." And then he goes, "Was I paranoid when my brother Bart tapped my phone? Was I paranoid when he opened my mail? Was he paranoid? Was I paranoid when he hired a detective to follow me?"
Yeah.
Wow, he really did those things? Oh my God, he did? I thought it was paranoid.
Yeah.
Classic. Just classic.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
And then, of course, the homophobic jabs that Furley gets in there when he's trying to tell his niece that, you know, Jack is gay. You know, you're wasting your time here, honey. Like,
yeah. Well, it's funny that you bring that up because, truth be told, as I was watching this episode, I mean, I was aware of it. I, you know, I heard sort of, you know, the homophobic rhetoric and the language that was used. But not that it didn't bother me in the way that it did before, but I think I've sort of moved away from the, you know, the manner in which I watched the show in prior seasons, and where I was focused only on that. But I sort of, I interpreted it and I received it in a way that, I don't know, not that I didn't have an issue with it, but it felt like it made sense for that character. And I felt like it was done in a way that, I don't know, I just feel weird about how I felt about it because I was laughing, right?
Oh, you should go with what you feel. I mean, it's funny though, even though but it's filtered through a total idiot, right?
So. Right. And I think that really changes it too, is because when I look at somebody like Roper, you know, he's a bit more level-headed, and you feel like maybe this is the right, you know, some of the writers speaking through this character. But with somebody like, you know, Furley, you take it for what it is and you laugh. And I couldn't, I don't know.
Of course. How can you not laugh at a line by Furley where he goes, you know, there are a lot of different kinds of men in the world, and Jack isn't any of them. I mean, like, come on, that's like the funniest. Yeah. It's still hilarious,
you can see it, like when Furley delivers these lines. Like, I mean, sure, it's in character, but I feel like John Ritter is, you know, he's. Get cracking up to these lines too, because some of his facial expressions, like while they are probably in character for Jack, like you can tell he was, you know,
oh yeah, kind
of thrown by, you know, the delivery and the timing and how it was great.
Yeah, he's Don Knotts is the king. He is absolutely the king.
Yeah, and then it goes back to, you know, my previous talking points and episodes since we've been introduced to Furley is that. There's no episode that isn't better with him in it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
And there were episodes that we've seen that, you know, you just kind of were trudging through because, you know, you needed a Furley there. And it was, I don't know, it was great. And it was, and I didn't, you know, we didn't really leave the apartment too often. That used to bother me. It didn't, because the characters and the physical, you know, the physical comedy was so strong that it didn't matter, right?
Yeah.
That comes with time, and, you know, we're season five, and you're more familiar with the characters and everything. But I felt like this was an episode and a cast that is like full steam, like. All the, you know, the cogs are working. And even though one of the main characters is swapped out mid-season, like they're still, you know, delivering. And I was very impressed, which these are words I never thought I'd use to talk about this show.
Well, I said to you in season one, I'm going to turn you. It's going to get better. It's only going to get better. And it still is going to get better. I'm telling you. When Terry gets in the mix, forget about it. Anyways, all in all, you love Double Trouble, and so did I.
Loved it.